It is nice to be here today, and particularly to be here with Anne and the rest of you, but particularly with Anne. Anne and I work together at St. John's Well Child and Family Centers. I find it's helpful, especially since we have an intimate gathering, to just tell you a little bit about who I am, and perhaps we'll have time in the Q&A to hear about why you're here, what your story is. I entered medicine because of my interest in community and my involvement in community development and local participatory democracy efforts in international settings. I worked for a while in India and was fascinated between this intersection between democracy and health. And democracy meaning the robust community development, community-oriented organizing that Anne has exemplified here. So I decided to enter medicine to pick up that tool in the tool belt. What I'll tell you about is something called Rx Democracy that I founded in 2008. Just at the same time I joined on with Anne and a few other colleagues at St. John's to help do and just participate in some of the incredible work that you just heard about. So I have no conflicts of interest, but if you have ideas, please tell me. I'm affiliated with the National Physicians Alliance as a board member, the founder of something called Health Begins, which helps to train clinicians in addressing health where it begins and their own interventions. If you'd like to talk about that later, we can do so. And as I mentioned, formerly at St. John's with Anne. These are the learning objectives. I'm not going to go through them in the interest of time, but also because I think these are the better questions to address. So those other learning objectives will be answered if we think about just these basic questions. Why does this matter to me? Why does Rx Democracy, or the idea of the intersection between democracy and health, matter? And I'll speak from the perspective of the National Physicians Alliance, a group of about 15,000 physicians in different specialties. It's an organization that was founded in 2005. To try to surface the interests of the patient over the traditional guild-related interests of the profession of medicine, notwithstanding our own interests as part of the NPA to advocate for physicians. We believe that principles of service, integrity, and advocacy are fundamental to the profession and have organized ourselves in clusters around the country with a national office here in D.C. So I'll answer that question about how it mattered to us and talk about what we, how the Physicians Alliance and our allies started to answer the questions of what we can do in response to a couple questions that I'll surface, and then how we thought about getting involved as clinicians in talking about that intersection between democracy and health. So a quick poll, two questions. How many of you are located in clinical settings or have affiliations with clinical settings? So a few. How many of your clinical settings, for those who raised your hand, offer voter registration services? Raise of hands, please, as far as you know. Voter registration, that's right. So that's, no one raised their hand except for Anna. That's because we work together and with everything you've done. So I'll ask the next question, which is, if you were to have three choices, and the answer choices are either lower, the same, or higher, the question is, do you believe physicians vote more often, as often, or less often than the general public? So show of hands for more often. So show of hands for as often. Show of hands for less often. Leading question, right? So I primed the pump here a little bit. I'm gonna answer that. I'll tell you the answers to that question in a second, but I wanted to get to the punchline. I find that in these conversations, especially given the intimate gathering, I want to go to the last learning objective, which is what we can do, and just leave you with this, if nothing else, today. There are simple ways that we spoke to physicians and clinicians in general who are quite busy, have a lot of things in their mind, and when we go through these presentations, we usually lead with the punchline. Here's how you get involved. Take five steps today. You sign up, put up a poster like this one here, that frames health and democracy as related issues in their clinical setting. You identify a nonpartisan group close to you, and we, as Rx Democracy, help with that. And we convene. We have the clinical champion who raises their hand and says, I want to do this. Meet with the civic group that's out there. Again, nonpartisan groups, of which there are many, and many of which are our partners now at the national level. And then we facilitate and support them to put together a voter engagement project in their clinic, so that more hands, hopefully, in the future start going up when we ask that same question. So the answer to the question, I think there was a few folks who answered this correctly. On average, in the last four national elections, not including 2008, but forgive me for not having that data, physicians voted 9% less often than the general public and 22% less often than lawyers. So it's also worthwhile thinking about the general role of health professionals in civil society. And again, this is from the perspective of what we were talking about in the National Physicians Alliance in 2008. I'll paint a picture really quickly. March 2008, the height of the primaries, there was a national conference for this group. We gathered in Houston, Texas, and I was sitting around with some colleagues, and each of us were describing ways in which we were supporting the candidates of our choice on our off time, right? Phone banking or just writing a check or doing something. As you recall, civic engagement, civic participation was at a peak in 2008, right? A lot of individuals came into the civic process for the first time, including professionals who were, for whatever reason, excited about their potential civic voice. We were not immune as physicians, and what we said was, well, what does it look like if we actually do this as part of our day job? In other words, shouldn't it be as easy to register to vote at the doctor's office as it is at the DMV? We took that question and we started asking that question of ourselves and our colleagues, and we realized we were onto something, and I'll tell you about what we did in a second. But in general, clinician advocacy efforts, we realized, have tended, and there's literature to support this, and I can provide the citations, have tended to address issues that face relatively limited opposition from vested interests. Right? We do well, and you'll often see many clinicians involved in issues that are important public health measures, but don't really have a strong opposition in general. It's just the path of least resistance. We tend to be involved in that way. It's a natural human behavior, and our profession is no different. Advocacy and civic participation, specifically civic participation, actually, have now recently surfaced as parts of the medical professional creed, right? The charter convened, there's the charter on the medical profession that was convened a few years ago by the ABIM Foundation, the American Board of Internal Medicine, and a few other foundations, actually specifically highlights the role of advocacy and civic participation. And it's important to note that in reflecting on our experience in the U.S., and I think this is probably true for most other settings, for clinicians, for health professionals, those in the service delivery business of health, our traditional emphasis when we think about advocacy is usually a model that emphasizes advocacy for patients, right? Representing the voiceless, going to the Hill, talking about what our patients need, absolutely essential and important work, but it tends to underemphasize the role of what we can do in advocating with our patients. And I'll explain what I mean. There are established models, as I kind of highlighted, for clinician advocacy, but again, advocating with patients and thinking of models in the profession for doing that are few and far between. And what's interesting on the flip side is that when you start speaking to, and I think many of you can speak to this or perhaps actually are representatives of this, civil society groups themselves often, who are addressing health where it begins, right, the determinants of health, often do so without significant help or coordination with the healthcare sector, right? Many of these things are happening outside, and we're working on what's happening in the exam room, and there's a space in between. And I would argue that it's actually a space that's underexplored, although it's happening more and more these days, especially after gatherings like this. I'll share a quick story, which is that when we started this this effort and asked that question about voter registration in a nonpartisan way in doctor's offices, one of my colleagues in Southern California works in Long Beach, and he went to the LA County Registrar's office, and they had a gathering for civic groups, and he introduced himself and he said, "I'm a physician. I'm interested in, you know, being involved in this process." He described the project, this idea that we wanted to help get involved, and he got a standing ovation, which he thought was entirely undeserved, but also very odd. And we started talking about that more. We started talking to these groups, and what we realized is, over a period of time, what's happened, someone said this during the course of our conversation with one of the civic allies, and she put it in a way that was about relationships. And she said, you know, when civil society groups try to reach out to healthcare professionals and hospitals particularly, they often get the response that makes them feel like, "He's just not that into you." Right? So that's the summation, essentially, of those last two slides, perhaps more pointed than any of the other jargon that I just threw at you. So why does this matter to me? This is our my reflection on what we did to answer this question. So we started diving deep into this and found that the problem seems to be I think, understandably, the disparities within our democracy, the civic disparities we see, are tied to health disparities. Not a very novel proposition. And when we start looking at healthcare from a civic perspective, we can characterize it as a civic institution in crisis. The business model is unsustainable. all of our population health outcomes and disparities are examples of that. There's a question of the societal return on investment for the amount of money that goes into what we're doing in our industry. The outcomes are not commensurate, and the question is, why are we still getting away with it, right? Why are we still able to extract this much amount of resources from the healthcare, from our treasure, and devote it to an activity that is not giving us the best bang for the buck? This is probably, and also, as I mentioned, there are not many structural opportunities for patients and providers to improve health where it begins, again, to interface with determinants of health. So this is the problem as we characterized it in terms of why it matters to us, and brief discussions about health disparities. I won't go into extensive detail because there are many sessions at this conference, in fact, that have actually addressed this in exacting detail. But we know about the health disparities, and we know why these health disparities exist. And I think many of the sessions here and many of your own experiences and the literature that's out there indicate that disparities obviously are due to limited access to quality care, a lack of routine primary care and prevention, unhealthy determinants of health. But a determinant of health that is perhaps most upstream, that is not yet fully explored in terms of how to make this concrete for healthcare itself, is the role of civic participation and political efficacy, right? So what is the role of having or not having a civic voice as a determinant of health and its role in perpetuating health disparities? To put it simply, the popular saying, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. That's essentially what we're talking about. And again, this is not shocking, I think, to many people when we present it in this way, but the evidence, one bit of data that I find compelling is data that indicates that clearly constituencies that come from low-income groups compared to those from higher or middle-income groups are less heard. This is a report from a voter advocacy group, a nonpartisan voter advocacy group based here in D.C., that found that legislators in Congress in the 107th and 108th Congress were three times more responsive to higher or middle-income. Again, your coffee table discussions, what happens, I think all of us understand this, and the question is, how do we bring this into the public health framework? Again, these health and civic life are interdependent. The same groups that experience health disparities are the same ones that experience civic disparities, and that is not coincidental. Voting, the graph here on your left looks at voting rates by economic status. In red are those who have an income less than $15,000 a year. In blue are those who have incomes greater than $25,000 a year. This is from 2008 census data. On the right, voting gaps by race, and you see in blue the Latina population, the red is for African-American populations, and then the white for white populations. And you see the same disparities that exist in 2004, 2006, and 2008, notwithstanding some of the increases that occurred in 2008. There's still disparities that exist. But if I was to take out the captions for those tables and put health indicators, any of the ones that many of you are familiar with, diabetes, chronic diseases, acute diseases, etc., we find the same things. Interestingly, in 2009, the Department of HHS highlighted the fact that this interdependency exists. Health is essential, they said, to the ability to participate fully in a democratic society. And I find this statistic from the U.S. Census in 2008 really interesting, which is that illness or disability itself, when the Census Bureau went out and said, why did those who registered to vote, so they already went to that step, why did they not vote? 15 million people actually registered but did not vote in 2008. And they found that illness or disability was one of the reasons and most highly cited in those who were in low-income populations compared to 1 in 14 in high-income voter populations. So in the interest of time, I'm going to skip through a couple of more discussions but talk about the teaching hospital campaign. Forgive me for the picture problem. Teaching hospitals themselves, just like community clinics like St. John's, disproportionately take care of those who are experiencing health and civic disparities. Teaching hospitals represent 22% of hospitals and provide 70% of uncompensated care. The stats are, it's clear that we are, many of us in the Physicians Alliance and our partners in healthcare are oftentimes, especially if you're at a conference like this, working in settings that are disproportionately caring for these populations. So the question that we asked is, what can we do? In that, we founded something called Rx Democracy, and the goal is to advance civic participation and promote a health agenda. We engage healthcare providers, encourage professionals to register and vote, and educate our civic allies about health issues. The coalition included these partners here on the left. These are all health organizations from the American Medical Student Association, and others. And then we brought civic allies to the table, including Nonprofit Vote, the National Association of Latino Elected Officials, and the League of Women Voters, at least in California. And in 2008, in over 200 sites, the coalition registered over 26,000 voters. Drop in the bucket, but I think an important proof of the concept. This is what it looks like. This is Asian Health Services with some of our posters there. This is in 2010. This is also is what Democracy in a Health Center looks like. This is a town hall meeting, but it's happening in a community clinic, much like the pictures that Anne showed. The potential is profound. We learned many lessons. I'll highlight the topmost, the lesson on the topmost left there, which is that as we go through this and think for healthcare professionals what our role is, it's important to not just focus on voter registration, but to advance civic participation. And there are other lessons as well, which is essentially that clinicians, physicians included, are best not as voter registrars, but as door openers, to essentially be an echo for the civil society groups, so that we can say, no, we are that into you. Our campaign now that we're working on and starting to do preliminary analysis around is in taking the activities from 2008 and those 200 sites, expanding the network to include others, and specifically supporting residents in some flagship settings in Boston, two hospitals there, in New York, where there's two hospitals, Los Angeles and Philadelphia, where we've started these residency projects, where residents are now the executive directors of this Rx Democracy project in their hospital, and they then open the door to a nonprofit, nonpartisan civic group, and start implementing and have started to implement voter registration activities, with the ramp up happening starting in March of 2012. Our goal is to register 50,000 new voters by Election Day, primarily in 19 states. Those states there, chosen primarily because those states have, they represent where our assets are in terms of our network, from the medical students to the residents and the faculty and teaching hospitals. And we've broken down based on the basis of where the highest number of unregistered voters are in each state. We've broken down the targets. And you can see in places like Massachusetts, where we have now two hospitals online, the goal is actually quite simple, 1,800 voters to be registered by 2012. We do this specifically to make sure it's seen as feasible and to answer this question about how do I do this when a resident or a busy physician or clinician says, what? Voter registration? What are you talking about? And what we say is, sign up, put up a poster, and then the other things will follow. So.